This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Welcome to another episode of The Magic Word and our conversations with conjurers. This one is going to be another fun episode. In particular, and I say fun because we're going to learn how to laugh from someone who is a consultant and teaches laughter therapy. But before we get started, I want to remind everybody that we're going to be having another week on the contest that if you have not already entered, to be sure and go to the blog at themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you can find a form to enter for a chance to win one of two sets of books that are the Golden Age of Magic Posters from the Norm Nielsen collection that was published by Gabe Fiore. We spoke with him last week from Potter & Potter Auctions, and if you hurry, you can still get in on the contest. So don't forget to go and do that. Well, if imitation is the fondest form of flattery, certainly that Tommy Cooper should be very flattered in his grave. I say that because apparently from many people's perspective, they believe that Tommy Cooper was arguably the funniest and best comedian that the UK has ever produced. And this week, we're going to speak with someone who actually performs a tribute show to Tommy Cooper, and there are several who do that. And that's why I said that imitation is the finest form of flattery, because there are lots of people who have Tommy Cooper impressions and shows around the UK, and apparently there are a lot of magicians who use his tagline of just like that in their shows. And our guest will talk about all that then this week as well. There are so many different avenues that we go down with our guest here this week. I know that you're going to grab on to more than one different idea that he's giving us. And also, from an historical perspective, it's great to hear what he has to say and learn about Tommy Cooper, because there were a lot of things I didn't know until I had spoken with this gentleman. So, all the way from England this week, please welcome my guest, Mr. Clive St. James, here on The Magic Word. Today I've got with me a guest from London, England, someone who is a member of the Magic Circle. This is someone also who holds a Guinness World Record, and as well as that, he is a member of the Toastmasters International, is president of that, and member of the British Equity, and also is a laughter yoga leader. He's a teacher and a trainer. That'd be kind of interesting. I want to hear more about that. But what I really am focused on, I think, is quite interesting, is that he does a one-man show of Tommy Cooper. And I would like to know a lot more about this gentleman, not only about Tommy Cooper, but also about our guest who is today, Clive St. James. Hi there, Clive. How are you?
I'm really well. Lovely to hear you. Lovely to hear your accent. We have a great affiliation with our Americans there. Well, I've got American family. We lived in Palm Beach Gardens for 5 or 6 years, had a wonderful house there. And in Texas, in Houston, I've got a cousin. I haven't actually met him yet, but he's got a couple of restaurants there. So.
Oh, is that right? Where are they? What are the names of the restaurants?
Well, that's it. I haven't met him, and I was just trying to look them up before I came. It came about, we have a big family, Mormons, in Utah. And
right.
Over in Vegas, in Wonderground, with our friend Jeff there doing his monthly show.
Right.
And they made contact with us. So we jumped in a car and went to Utah for the weekend. And my cousin Ron there worked for Disney all his life and had this wonderful house which had a theatre underneath. They all have to, when they build their homes there, have to have this outward one. Why am I telling you? You obviously know this sort of thing. These great big underground places where they can go in times of trouble and that. And he's turned his into a theatre full of memorabilia. So as soon as I pulled up there, all the family were waiting in a 40-seater theatre. I had to go down and do a mini Tommy Cooper show. So they all got to know me just like that.
Just like that. Well, that's pretty funny. As far as, he said he worked for Disney but lived in Utah, so he's retired from Disney, or was that
down? Yeah, he's retired now.
Gotcha. Okay. And so, yeah, he had that basically an underground theater. Is it something that was open to the public, or he just has this private theater of his own and has people in from time to time who are friends and guests, or is it a public theater?
No, absolutely. Your second one there, it's from the family. And the Mormons there have an incredibly strong, big family. And they all have these wonderful big houses, fantastic communities. And I like a beer and a chat, but that is one of the few weekends it was completely dry. I was with my wife, and I thought, oh, we're not going to be having a normal Saturday night drink here, blah, blah, blah. We didn't miss it at all. And the strength of the family there, I'm just so impressed the way everyone looks after everyone there.
They really do. It's a completely different culture, that's for sure. And even, you know, I'm curious that I'm aware, of course, about their abstinence to alcohol, but also to caffeine, as I understand it. So did they serve you tea?
No, we just had water, really, which we were okay with. And I suppose it wasn't, we needed a dry weekend, having spent Vegas.
Right.
It was good.
Well, I was just thinking when I was in Hawaii once and visiting the Polynesian Center there, which was operated or is operated by the Mormons, and they did not serve, of course, they didn't serve alcohol, but they also didn't serve any sodas or that had caffeine in it, nor any kind of tea or coffee or anything like that, because as I understand it, people who are listening to this will correct me or confirm this, but to my recollection, it seems like that they are abstinent. They also abstain from drinking caffeine. But anyhow, so I thought perhaps as someone who might enjoy tea around tea time, that you might have missed that then too.
Well, a cup of Rosie Lee, as we call it. Yeah, put the kettle on for a cup of Rosie. It's more of a morning drink, really, to stimulate you. Not as much as what you Americans, you love your coffee, don't you?
That's for sure.
Turbocharged. Drink there.
I'm on my third cup now, and it's noontime here right now. So,
well, buzzing.
So tell me, when you were at Jeff McBride's Underground, you were performing there, and did you do a little bit of the Tommy Cooper show?
It was Wonderground, as he calls it.
Right.
No, I did Comedy Magic, but not the Tommy Cooper style, because I was part of a cabaret there. We were all doing our, I think it's 12 minutes you got to do, so I just did some fun magic and
right.
tricks and chatted to the audience. And coming from London, though I live in Poole now in Sandbanks, which seems to be constantly on the telly and in the public gaze, very fortunate to live by the seaside here, but coming from London, it always takes me back how the Americans just love the way we sound, and it can be sometimes when I'm chatting away, you don't even have, they just say, oh, just chat to us, that'll do us fine, don't bother about getting your cards up, tell us about London. And I would have loved to have been in America when I was a teenager with all the girls, and they, oh, wow, he's from
oh yes, yeah, that's true. You know, I was visiting, I remember as a child back when the Beatles were popular, and this would have been in like the early 60s, and I was visiting with my grandparents, and I went over to visit some kids who were neighbors, and I started speaking with an English accent, and long story short, I just kind of went with it and said that I was from England, and wow, the friends that I got. And finally, when I met this one guy's mom, she asked me some questions. She said, you're really not from England, are you? And she busted me. It's like, okay, you're right. She said, well, we won't tell them, but you got to leave.
But it used to be, Scott, ever so special to come from the UK, and in particular London. It was the center of everything. And I remember as a teenager going on my first working holiday around the south coast of South Africa there. And it was just fabulous. Just had to open your mouth and you were invited. I got to work in some great bars, which is what you do when you're walking along. And if you wanted, I'd just speak a bit louder at the bar and you know, just everyone wanted to chat to you. not quite the same nowadays. It's more that you put your hand over your mouth in some countries when you're talking. The world doesn't love the Great Brits for whatever reason. Maybe it's their football hooligan politics, or which we're not going to talk about.
I guess that's true. They certainly love their football.
We lost a tad of our likability, but I've never experienced it in America. You know, they just say, you know, especially when you go to some places, they're just not used to a different accent. They know. Oh, did you know the... Oh, yeah, we often end a cup of tea with her.
Well, it is interesting when you say that I have an accent. I don't pick that up myself, but I'm sure people are listening saying, what? You can't hear yourself talk? I mean, I don't think of myself that as having particularly a Southern accent. And they said, oh, yes, you do. There are certain words that are absolutely Southern. And I'm not originally from Texas. I'm from the central part of the United States where I grew up. And so I think my accent is really more cosmopolitan. But there are some words over the last 20 or 30 years, golly, I guess, or that I've lived here probably 30 years in Texas that I certainly do have that, but I know that there are different accents across the country. In other words, a Boston accent is different from Chicago, which is different from Texas or from Georgia. But I think in England also that you have different accents, particularly even within London. I mean, Cockney and East End and different areas that to me, when you look at a country that is the size of some states here in the United States, and there is such a disparity or difference, I should say, of dialect from northern to southern England. It's amazing.
Yes, we're more of a collection of villages compared to all you chaps over there. But you are the United States of America, and New Yorkers are completely different to people that are across the other side of the coast, from, say, people in, well, everyone goes to Vegas, you can't really say that, but
right.
Texas would speak and behave and drive and have different values, I feel, than people in New York, and it does seem. I mean, we lived in Palm Beach there, and when people ask me about America, I can't really feel I can comment on what perhaps an average American's day is like, because, you know, Palm Beach is a very special place, and I don't think it's typical of America. So, yeah, well, everyone drives around in great big cars. They have really big white teeth and these wonderful sunshines and don't do too much work.
Well, I think for the most part, people in Florida and Palm Beach and elsewhere are really transplants from the Northeast. People who have retired from their jobs in New York and decide we want to get out of this cold and go someplace where it's warm, and so everybody goes back to Miami or wherever.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We had an awful lot of friends that live in New York most of the time. And then I think it's something to do with tax. They have houses in Florida and just fly back and forth.
Interesting. Well, I wanted to ask you about the Guinness World Record that you hold. Tell me about how that you got interested in this, and explain to the listening audience over here what your record is and when you had it.
Okay. Well, I am the fastest comedian on the planet. I can tell more jokes per minute than anyone else. Well, indeed, anyone that's being tested. I'm in the seventh consecutive year of holding it, and I've always, always loved telling jokes. In fact, that's how I communicated as a youngster at school. I wasn't a particularly confident person, if you like, but what I did love was the ability to make people laugh, because I sensed that they would warm to you. I didn't know at that particular time that when people laugh, it releases loads of natural drugs, it makes them feel better. So when you're at a party, if you make someone feel good and can interact with you, and your speech is such a powerful thing, people will invite you to more places, and it's just more powerful than the best ever double lift that you could ever imagine by just chatting nicely and telling jokes. Okay, and that's how I started off. I started off as a stand-up comedian. Well, I started off as an after dinner speaker, which was ever so popular in the 80s. People that had specialist subject and could just chat after dinner about it. Big market. It still is now really. And
You mean comedy clubs? There are still comedy clubs around the UK?
Yeah, there are. It's not as big as it was in the 80s. And I used to be a regular on the longest running comedy TV show, Stand Up Live, which was very, very fast and live and a whole lot of fun. And we all want our unique selling point. And about 7 years ago, we were in the World Cup. Not like your World Cup, because we have other countries from different parts of the world.
Our World Cup is basically the U.S. I don't understand when they say World Series. You know, does that mean we beat Argentina? And, you know, no, it's just, I understand.
But Germany were the hot favourites to win, and indeed they did. And I found out during the course that a German also held the title for being the fastest comedian. So I thought, we may not be able to beat them in football this particular season, but I'm going to beat them in joke telling. So we were over in America, and I spent 3 months honing in my material, writing it with the wife. We used all old classic jokes, but one had to quite quickly follow it on to another, to set up the punchline, getting it shorter and shorter. I can actually do 35 jokes in a minute. I think on my website, on a news channel, I did 32, but 26 is my world record at the moment there. And so it's the Germans that had it. I came back from America and went into a tour around the theatres in the UK, and I was honing it in, getting it faster and faster. And then on our last night in theatre, I did it, and we had the judges there. You have to have timekeepers. It's all sorts of mega paraphernalia that you have to have: video timekeepers. And judges that really have to be almost policemen to be part of the panel, and you have to be a professional comedian. So it does then validate the jokes, i.e., that's what you do for a living. You do [S2] Right. [S1] Stand-up comedy, you see. So, and that was it. We beat the Germans. I think it was 17 jokes he did in a minute, and I did 26. We flattered him. The story went crazy. we were getting booked everywhere. Everyone loves a world champion. It will never, you know, eventually someone will. I had the record a couple of years ago for 4 years for being the fastest blindfolded comedian. And someone beat it on Britain's Got Talent.
Fastest blindfolded comedian. Okay, so you just add another layer
sorry,
to that.
Sorry. Blindfolded magician, I meant to
oh,
say.
Oh, okay.
So I had that for 4 years, and someone beat me on Britain's Got Talent, and they rang me up and said, do you want to come on and win it back? And I'm not really interested. That goes.
Already been there and done that. Yeah, you don't need to try and win back your title. Yeah. You know, you're not like George Foreman or somebody, or Muhammad Ali. You want to come back, keep winning. You obviously are not giving a chance for the audience to react nor to laugh, and so they're kind of just rapid fire, rat-a-tat-tat with these jokes, I assume. And then they give you the award right there, or do they say you've won and it'll be sent to you, or how are you? When do they have the presentation?
Right, that's 5 questions, there, Scott.
Yes, rat-a-tat-tat for me too.
Okay, then.
More questions in 10 seconds than most. I get a record.
So the audience has to be one that's open to the public. And as I was in theatre, And as I came to the show, I would do the encore, and then I'd say, look, anyone that wants to stay on, I'm going for a Guinness World Record now. It's just going to be for a minute, but it's got to be in front of a live audience. And I've tested you out, and I consider you are a live audience. So they're already on my side. They come to see me.
Right.
They want me to succeed, you see.
Sure.
So not everyone, when the judges are looking, it's got to be continual laughter. But what will happen after the first joke, people will be laughing and then not come back into it, perhaps until the third or fourth joke. They've missed out on it while they've been laughing, you see. But as long as the audience is continually laughing, i.e. you're whipping them up, it's considered then. So you've got to instigate virtually a minute of non-stop laughter, that someone or dozens of people must be laughing at that particular joke in time. So they watch it on, it's all got to be videoed and set out, very accurate, as you can imagine, on the timing. The judges there, everyone sends in their reports, and it takes about 3 months for them to then come back with the certificate and for you then to officially say, you're going in the Guinness Book of Records. So,
and so they have an awards presentation or ceremony or some date when you come back, presented in a live presentation or on television or something?
Well, on my particular one, they just sent it in the post for me. There wasn't anything going like that. And I wanted to organize my own. The television channels were aware of it. And, you know, I was ready. As long as you've got the certificate and you're in the book, you're ready to go.
Right. And now, so when you're in the book, I know that Guinness puts out a book annually. So you were in the 2019, was it? You said, so you won 2 years in a row, or?
I'm in my seventh year.
Seventh year, that. Okay.
Yeah, 2013 I'm in.
So again, this is kind of a relatively new category as far as the fastest talking comedian. Is it fast talking, or is it just quick jokes?
It's the most amount of jokes. It was an established record, so I'd beaten it or someone else. But there's an awful lot of people like the one-minute challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So the category, there's quite a lot of, there's a lot of silly ones who can eat the most beans in a minute and things like that.
Well, without asking you to repeat that or try for a new record here today, could you give us a quick minute of a few of the jokes that would be included?
Yeah, I mean, it's if you go onto my website, you'll see me in action there and indeed have a look at me and see all the fun of the fair. But the timing and the beat would be exit signs that are on the way out, two elephants fall off a cliff, boom, boom, I'm on a whiskey diet, I lost 3 days last week. So it's that type of beat, but you need elephants whipped up for it there. They've got to, for humour to take place, you have to create the right atmosphere for someone just to say, right, do a minute's worth of jokes. You haven't got a rapport. People out there can't see me. They won't know me.
Right.
So it's, you can't have a minute of hilarity if you want, just like.
If it's just me who's chuckling along the way, that's not the same. I understand. Well, I'll post that on the blog so people can go to themagicwordpodcast.com for this particular episode, and they'll see a link to the video there. I want to get into Tommy Cooper in just a moment, but carrying on, though, with laughter and being a comedian and everything, I assume that you have worked at different clubs and run into Noel Britton from time to time. I'd spoken to him many years ago about comedy and the comedy club circuit and what it was like there in the UK for some number of years ago. And I know he was very involved and still is with the World Wildlife Federation and working with orphaned orangutans. And he was telling me at the time when we chatted about how that he sees how these animals are treated, and it makes him think that there's not much humor in the world, and it's kind of hard for him to kind of come back and switch that switch again on, so this way he can all of a sudden be funny again when he sees the bad situations of different countries when he's over there. So anyhow, have you worked with Noel? I know you know him, obviously, from the Circle, Noel's president of the Magic Circle. But have you worked with him at comedy clubs in past years?
No, I haven't worked with him. Last time I saw Noel, I was taking Jeff McBride there. He'd come over from America to get one of his awards, and he was doing workshops and that. So I picked up Jeff, and we had lunch just before the ceremony went in. And, of course, there was Noel there to meet him. Mm-hmm. Noel quickly came to fame, but he used to do a talk, Bizarre Bath, it was called, where it became one of the most famous talks in the world, where he would take you around. Bath is a place where he lived, and he would take you around it and do magic tricks along the way and create all these wonderful illusions that are there. He's not a personal friend, I don't know. More often than not, when I'm doing my Tommy Cooper show, that's it. It's me. It's in theatre, 2 45-minute sets. When I'm doing stand-up, I'm part of a bigger show, and then they just really just have the one comedian on then. Or comedy magician.
Right, yeah, I understand. Yeah, I know about the Bizarre Bath tours that he was doing. I was over performing at Bristol Day of Magic some years ago and went to be on his walking tour, but it was raining that evening, so they canceled it. So we ended up, I think, having dinner together, going over to Smoke and Mirrors or something, he and Mandy and us. And anyhow, so I never got to a chance to actually go on the tour, but I heard it was just outstanding. But as far as laughter goes also, I want to go to the laughter yoga leader. I've heard of goat yoga, but what's laughter yoga?
You've got my goat. I've never heard of goat yet. What's that? A goat or something?
Literally, you're with goats, and there are goats that will stand on your back while you're going through some of these things when you're on your stomach. A goat will walk on your back. And they're supposed to have some calming influence, I guess. I'm not certain. But, yeah, you can look it up. I mean, it's a real deal.
Especially if you're a mountain goat on the side. That gets adrenaline.
Right.
Well, yeah, I like the curry goat, but I think that's about how I got to them. Okay, so laughter yoga then. As we've all known that yoga has been around for thousands of years, and it's ever so good for you. And laughter, we've all known, and people say, it's the best medicine. But it's sort of been passed along because we sort of feel it is and hope it's true. But in 1995, a doctor in India, and this is one of the things that I lost this year, that I couldn't actually get out to see him there, did scientific research and found out that when we laugh, it reduces incredible chemicals that would cost a fortune if they were for sale on the streets, but you just actually have stored in your brain, ready to be released. Now, they will be released if the laughter is sustained. So if you're having continual laughter through exercises and breathing, excuse me, you will encourage these drugs to come down and give you an incredible buzz. If you've never experienced it, you're doing yourself a complete disfavor. I mean, there's loads of clubs that are online now where you can join in and have a good old laugh. The beauty of it is, as well, is that the brain is a bit stupid. And it doesn't know the difference between false laughing and real laughter. So if you just start laughing and chuckling, and keep that up for a minute just to warm up there, and also getting rid of a lot of stale air in your lungs, completely empty in your lungs. Because if you think, air is the thing that makes you tick. It's the thing that gives you the buzz. And the more air you have in you, the better you are to deal with everyday life problems, decisions making. So what you want to do is exhale and get rid of every single bit of air, and then inhale beautiful fresh air. And if you're not used to it, you can't believe people are just walking along with all this stale air in the bottom of their lungs. They're underperforming. They're only running on three cylinders. Okay, they've got the wrong fuel. So get that all out there. And then we can do different exercises. The laughter yoga leader will show you the exercises that you can do. So you start emitting these great fun sounds. And as we know, laughing is contagious. So it actually becomes real laughter anyway when you start looking around the room and everyone's just chatting away and then go into involuntary hysterics, which, you know, they just can't explain. I mean, it's going crazy. It's all over the world now, laughter yoga. Big companies are having people coming in to start their day with a laughter yoga session, because they're then getting the most out of their people through the day, especially if they've got decision makers. They want to get the most out of them. The people are valuable assets. So the more you can get out of them, the more you nurture and look after them, the better it is going to be. So look for every opportunity to have a good laugh. And you know, you may really, really, really not feel like it, and perhaps that's the time when you should be doing it. It will change your mood.
So it really releases the endorphins.
Yeah, the serotonin goes crazy, and it's been proven now that it benefits people that have got cancer. In some cases, people swear that it's got them through it and cured them. Helps you with your appetite if you're eating too much. Go onto my website. There's a list of things that benefit you by getting the oxygen around you and making you feel better and enabling you and empowering you to function as a better human being.
Right. So what you're doing essentially then is you're emptying your lungs because you're laughing so hard. You can hardly, when they say, I can't catch my breath because I'm laughing so hard, that's a good thing. And so when they're doing this, I assume they're seated. I mean, this isn't something that you have a yoga mat and have on yoga attire or whatever. You can do this anytime at any place.
Absolutely. In our classes, we have people walking around and taking on different things. You can be a car if you want, just to give people an exercise to create the laughter, because if you're not used to it, it's easy, you need a way to simulate it. So you could be a laughing car, so you're starting it up by going or you could be pulling as you're stretching up to pull a big pint of laughter gas down, and you're pulling that down and you're doing the stretching eggs. I'm actually demonstrating this, believe it or not, and you can't see me, but you've got all this stretch going on as well, you see.
Right.
So
right.
The class can be between 30 and 40 minutes. Everyone's buzzing, and then you just sit down, or sometimes people lay down, and a bit of time there just to come back down again.
That's an interesting revenue stream. I hadn't really thought of branching out or going into that area, but that's certainly something that is important. I know obviously a lot of speakers will have a range of emotions when they are talking, that it will evoke laughter or perhaps some crying or self-contemplation or whatever during the course of a 30 or 40 minute talk. But in this case, it's specifically just focused on laughter. And I think that's pretty amazing.
It's a great breakout. If I'm at a corporate event and it's really heavy on, because they really get the most out of their people when they're in training, all of a sudden everyone just comes out. They come to me for 25 minutes. We have a really good laugh. That energizes them. And of course, with me having the world record for being the fastest comedian. And they said, well, guess what? You don't have to like his jokes. He's not going to be telling you any jokes, but you are going to have a great time. And back in they go to the conference again, and they're buzzing. And you can see the speakers watching it. You can see that, wow, that's energized them.
Well, another thing that's important, I think, are the muscle contractions as you're laughing, that your face is going through a lot of gyrations, which has to be good for you also. I know Jeff McBride and others teach about how that you should be doing these facial exercises and opening your mouth and everything before you go on stage and perform.
Yeah, yeah. It's like having an internal massage. It's not just your facial muscles. It's all your tummy, your abdominals, everything. Some people's legs are shaking away as well when they really take it. Unless you forced it, not many people have gone, but most people go through their life without laughing for a good 20, 25 minutes. They won't experience the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
unless they've been to a Tommy Cooper show, of course.
Yeah, and so let's lead in, obviously, to Tommy Cooper. There have been just a lot of really great magicians and comedians who have had their own shows in the UK over the years, like Paul Daniels, David Nixon, Tommy Cooper, and others in the past. And as I understand it, that Tommy Cooper was quite popular among Brits and known every place, and I've heard some really interesting and funny stories about his personal life and everything then too. And also, as I understand it, that I know you have this one man show, but you're not the lone cowboy. I believe there are others who are doing Tommy Cooper tributes throughout the UK too. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. I would say that people of a certain age group, there is no one that hasn't done a Tommy Cooper impersonation. But if you look at it, he was the most loved, our greatest comedian ever, really. He was the highest paid performer on television.
Wow.
When I was putting the show together and that, I spent time with the great Paul Daniels. Paul was a mega fan. And I remember the first time going into Paul's house, he has the same cast of Tommy Cooper on his mantelpiece as I do. And I just looked at it and it is just a statue of Tommy. And it was great. And we spoke about how I wanted to do different things, how I wanted to say things. Mine's particularly unique compared to, and that's why I get all the big bookings, if you like, and part of the big ceremonies.
Well, what is your USP? What's your unique selling point?
I am a member of the Magic Circle.
Mm-hmm.
I hold the world record and where lots of his jokes are featured. I performed for the remainder of his family when Sir Anthony Hopkins came over from America. I was the only, when we unveiled the statue in Caerphilly Castle, I was the only one allowed to do any magic there because I didn't want it to be taken over by the people that was there. And, you know, the main person was, of course, Tony Hopkins. When we unveiled the blue plaque at Tommy's house, where he lived most of his life in West London, I was the one there, you know, doing the speech and the ceremonies. So I get invited a lot, and I've got the biggest collection of Tommy Cooper memorabilia as well. So,
like, what kinds of things are in your collection that you revere the most?
I've got a lovely set of his glass bottle ones, mm-hmm. the nine bottle, if you're familiar with it.
Yeah.
I've got some sports jackets and dinner jackets that were given to me by members of his family. Lots of practical tricks and jokes that he used to have. The very large three-card Monty. I mean, again, there's the videos of me showing all this. It's more of a, have a look at it. Go onto the site if you're that interested. Go and have a look at the collection there. So whereabouts are we? So why I got into Tommy Cooper was when I was at home, he was the one that would reunite, bringing in every family together. Mum would come out of the kitchen, Dad would come into the from the garden, and everyone would sit down and have a good old laugh. And it was one of the few times I saw my mum laugh, because she suffered with quite bad depression, you see. So, but Tommy Cooper made her laugh. And I learnt all his jokes. I remembered them when I saw them on the telly. So if I felt she was feeling down a bit, I could perhaps assist her getting, making her laugh a bit as well. He was so popular that they had to stop him being on a Saturday night, because the pubs were emptying early, because you couldn't record now and watch it.
Right.
So everyone was just going, because Tommy was on the telly, and what were you going to talk about at work on a Monday morning?
So he was on Saturday nights, every Saturday.
So that was it. It came from, as I said, the after dinner speaking, doing my comedy, and I was getting rebooked because people were saying, can you do more of Tommy Cooper? I just used to do a little bit of it. Like most comedians did, if you've got a tough audience, you put on a vest and go, do a couple of Tommy Cooper jokes, and it would win the audience around straight away because they loved it. And people were saying, we want you to do more Tommy. And in the end, it became a complete show. And I have three angles, really. I go in the complete as Tommy and completely in character, or I talk about people that have met Tommy and their favourite stories and their favourite tricks, which is quite amusing. So things that were done outside the world of television, a sort of sneak behind the scenes, you see. So there's the anecdotal, or there's just, I can just go and do stand-up doing his jokes. And I think that's why people, you know, that advertise themselves as comedy magicians, and they perhaps don't get booked, or it's not quite as what the booker expected, where, if you are a comedian, you can stand there with no props and just do 20 minutes. And that's it. And it's making people laugh constantly. If people book a comedy magician and they're not quite tuned in the craft, and they're taking ages to get people up on the stage, and they're taking ages to set a scene and that, whereas a quick-fire comedian will just be going boom, 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 boom. And the comedy is just coming out from a few standard jokes that happen to go along with that trick. It's not what they're thinking, not what they're buying into, really.
Was his comedy more of where it would be observational and topical of the times, or were they things that were longstanding and would be just as funny 10 years from now, or were they long-winded stories, or were they just shortened to the point?
He was classic with the one-liner, but he loved a good shaggy story to take you down the road. But there's this gorilla. He goes into the bar. And it was a bit crowded, but funny enough, he went straight to the bar and got served. The barber, what do you want? And he said, I'll have a Manhattan, please. No, I'll have a Cosmopolitan. And the barber was a bit taken back because, you know, a big gorilla drinking a cocktail. He thought he was going to have a pint of beer or a large whiskey. And he said, that's no problem, sir. And he started to mix up his drink, and he's looking at the gorilla, and he thinks, I don't think this gorilla is as bright as what he should be. I'm going to stitch him up a bit. I'm going to overcharge him a bit. And he's made it. And he said, that's £35, about $45. And the gorilla looked a bit shocked. Well, you would, wouldn't you? $45 for a
flipping
cocktail. He didn't want no trouble. He didn't want to say, he paid up his money, and he said, thank you. And then the barman felt a bit sorry, so he thought, I'll have a chat with him, and I'll give him a free drink next time. So he said, oh, are you enjoying this, fella? He said, and the gorilla said, it seems okay. you see. He said, you know, I hope you don't mind me asking, because we don't get many gorillas in here. And he said, well, I'm not surprised at these prices. So that would be Tommy would be telling it physically, because you can act out. You can act out the barman, you can act out being the gorilla, and there's lots of facial, there's lots of...
Right, Tommy did a lot of mugging, and he was a tall guy. Wasn't he like 6'6 or something?
He was 6'3", and why people say he was particularly tall, being 6'3" in the 1950s, when the average height was nowhere near above that. And then when he put on his fez on stage, he'd be nearly 7 foot. With size 14 shoes, he would look like a clown, you see, and his shoes would be permanently feet at the 10 to 2 position. And this great big man, really long arms, you know, he was a good boxer. He was a regimental boxer. And so then he would have been enormous, but I was the same size. Well, I am the same size, 6'3". When I was growing up in the 70s, people used to say to me, oh, you're a tall lad. Nowadays, my kids are the same size. You don't, anyone over 6 foot, it doesn't even notice, really.
Yeah, good point.
So you know, it was right then. So that's when people say he only had to walk on and he looked funny. Because he was, I think you'd have to be about well over 7 foot now to get that same sort of reaction walking on stage.
Well, it's interesting, the types of programs that you say you offer, in which one in which you are actually completely in character, another one in which you're telling his kinds of jokes, and then others telling other stories I've heard about his life, because I understand that he was, I guess, frugal would be a polite way of saying he was pretty tight. And also the one story I had heard and someone had talked about here on the podcast once, that was where he was honking. His car had died, and that someone was honking behind him to get him to move forward, and he couldn't get the car going. There's again a long Shaggy Dog story kind of a thing, but essentially when he got out of the car and the people realized that's who it was, then they were surprised, and he said, why don't you get out of the car and you try and move it, and let's change places and I'll do the honking, you know, or something like that. So
That would be Tommy. He probably didn't have any petrol in it. I was chatting to the chap that lived 3 doors up from him, and Tommy wouldn't put a new battery in his car, so he always had trouble starting it in the morning. He knew what time he went to work, so Tommy used to go out exactly the same time as him and get him to push the car to get it going. And of course, have you heard the drink one?
Which, I have not.
This was a real classic, and he used to say, thank you very much for looking after me. Thank you very much. It's really been a pleasure. And what I'd like to do is give you a drink. And he used to pop a tea bag in their pocket, and he'd say, don't have a look at it now, because I'm a bit shy. But when you get home, get it out and have a drink. And it just used to make him laugh, make him smile.
Because people were thinking he was popping a note in their pocket, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But he wasn't that forthcoming, if you like, with the rounds. Because really, people like to buy Tommy Cooper a drink. And he'd be denying him that if you saw him, Scott, you'd want to say, Tom, I want to buy you a drink. And he would allow you to. And then you could say, I brought the great TC a drinky poo. And you could dine out on that for ages. So he had to give everyone there a fair turn. So there wasn't time to buy you one back.
So he was fairly notorious. Not an alcoholic, but at least a drinker.
Yeah, he liked to drink most days.
And I understand he liked hanging around magicians also and talking magic.
Yeah, he would love, wherever he was working, he would turn up at the local magic club and love to be along and sit there with the lads and learn a new trick. Most of them wouldn't go into his show because he was really a prop comedian, but he loved magical effects. He always had a pack of cards on him. He particularly loved card tricks and small packet tricks was another one of his favourites. It just completely took him to onto a different planet.
And so when he was on Saturday nights, did he have his own show? Was it a variety show, or was he part of someone else's, or did he just do short bits, or what?
If one of the shows, which was quite typical, you could say, was the Tommy Cooper Hour, and he would have a singer, perhaps another comedian on, and a specialist act. So he would then be in between those.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, in that case, I was curious whether he had people who were his consultants, I guess. Like, I know Ali Bongo had consulted for Paul Daniels, and many others consulted for others. So, but it sounds like that he really relied more on comedy, of which should I assume he may have had some writers, or maybe that these were made up mostly by himself. But he didn't rely too much on these consultants.
Yeah. In those days, and there was one particular chap in America that used to write jokes and send them to Tommy. And for every 50 he might send them, Tom would pick 3 or 4 of them out. And lots of jokes would be sent in to Tommy. Some he'd have to pay for, some not. But more often than not, especially with his Shaggy Dog stories, people liked to hear the stories and the jokes that they already knew. No one else would be able to get away with it. But they had a particular joke that he might tell about the gorilla or about the lion or about a giraffe or about his wife. And people have come to hear those jokes. So it didn't have to be new all the time. I mean, if I'm going back for a second booking as Tommy there, I couldn't make it completely different. It would upset them. They like to see bottle glass. They like to see the mine-read duck, the road tricks, the egg bag, all the classics. People would just love to watch. And it takes them back, I think, really, when you're taking on a character like Tommy from the 60s and the 70s, you're taking people back to where the world was a much happier and safer place. It wasn't perfect. It never will be. But you're hitting that nostalgia. When they see the big man with the fez on them there, I don't go home taking all the credit and thinking how great I am. I'm just a catalyst to remind them of what it was like being in the 60s, as you said earlier, the Beatles and that. And I provoke memories of all those sorts of things come flooding back.
Yeah, I think people like to be reminded of a particular better time in their own lives. And also, whenever they go to see or hear something, they want to hear some of the old stuff. Sure, they might want to hear something new. I'm thinking, for an example, if I would go to a concert to see Chicago or some band from a long time ago, I would want to hear music that I remember from their record albums or CDs. They can play some new stuff, but I really want to hear the Beach Boys. I want to hear old stuff, kind of a thing. Similarly, I would think that people who back then saw Tommy also wanted that familiarity from week to week, that they just liked him. And he did have a funny looking face, I think, just kind of in a way, kind of like Bob Sheets here in the U.S., that Bob just has a look that he just has to smile and you laugh, you know.
Yeah. Well, Tommy had a chin that took up a bit too much of his face, didn't he? And he had a cough and a laugh and a sigh, which comedians, magicians, anyone in the world of entertainment would pay a fortune. But he just naturally had that.
And perfect timing.
And his sideways looks, yeah. I mean, when he said retirement, it's easy. When they're laughing, stop talking. And when they stop laughing, then it's back to you again. And that's how he would sum it up.
Yeah, timing is very important, and the pause is very important.
We're talking about the pause. And when I'm training with the young speakers, or not necessarily young ones, you know, a lot of older people come to me as well that find themselves having to do presentations nowadays. It's one of the big things that I work on is when you, and we can even have competitions on timing it to see who could do the longest pause. So you set it up by saying, what I'm going to say to you next is ever so important. And how long can you hold that pause without starting to look the other way?
Right.
And that's the challenge I send them out to. Because although if they're doing a serious presentation and they just want a bit of fun, they don't want to be stand-up comedians, but they want to have the techniques that we use to draw people in on a story. And that's a great line. What I'm going to show you next is going to blow your mind.
That was a technique that Paul Daniels had used in order to get some additional time on television, as I recall, in which that back then that the television, the BBC, could cut and this however that they wanted in order to make it fit the time. But he was constantly saying, but in a few moments, I'm going to be showing you something and that you're not going to believe. And that it's almost to that point that you're going to see something amazing. So they had to kind of give him more time to complete the whole effect. And I thought that was pretty brilliant also.
His technical ability was incredible. He would know where all the cameras were, what their angles were, what the capabilities were. He understood lighting. He knew. He was really the business. You could ask Paul anything.
Right. He was really the conductor of the orchestra. I mean, he knew where everything was going and how to use it to his advantage.
Absolutely, absolutely. He could get the most out of such a little effect.
Right? Well, before so I close, I was going to ask you about one of your favorite stories about Tommy Cooper, or something that you know every time that you tell the story, that's something that people are going to remember, or, I mean, from a time in their own lives, or after you finish, it's like, oh, that was a wonderful story also. What's one of your favorite stories or memories or jokes?
Well, it's always hard when people ask me this because they're not in the set. So I can actually do 3 hours of talking about him, anecdotes, his stand-up comedy routines or his magical effects. I think, looking at the whole three, and there was one place where I did the whole 3 hours, which is a theatre in Eastbourne called the Lamb Theatre. I think the IBM have some big meetings in Eastbourne there. It's quite a big place. And Tom had a cottage down there, and I've worked in the theatre 7 times now. And I can actually have a drink with some people that have drunk with Tommy when he was down there. And so when I'm working there, it's really hardcore Tommy Cooper that want maximum. And I did the whole 3 hours one Sunday afternoon, and the local press were there, and they said 3 hours is just much too long for this type of entertainment. But he said, I don't know what bit I would have cut out.
Yeah.
So the stories are generally, if they're right for the situation,
sure,
that's what makes one bigger than the other and plays bigger there. It's choosing what's going to be right for the audience. I'm not trying to sidestep the question.
No,
there,
I understand.
If I was in working for At a Dinner, male only audience, it would be anecdotal. If it was After Dinner, mixed audience, ladies or just ladies, more of the fun stuff, slapdash magic, drop-in stuff, and quick magical trick, quick gags there rather than the big stories there. Depending on the age group, I can do half an hour of Tommy entertaining the troops during World War II when it was stationed out in Egypt, which takes me on to one of my favourite ones when I introduced the fez. And I remember going, Tom got the fez. He used to wear a pith helmet. Pith helmet when he was in the Navy. And he forgot it one day, being Tommy, and a waiter was walking past. And as you know, they all wear fezes in Egypt there. And Tom just plucked the fez off his head and went just like that. And the whole audience just erupted. It's probably something to do with being in mixed dress, because Tommy was in uniform entertaining them and he put the fez on. But he knew there was something magical about that. We all know, I think we counted up down the magic circle one afternoon, that there's over two dozen magicians that have worn fezes, but there's only one that you really remember, which is a great TC. But anyway, that's where Tommy picked it up. I was on a cruise down the Nile, and I got off, and it was in the days when all the Arabs used to sell their wares, trestle tables, along the side of the Nile. And I saw this one particular chap, he had a fez on, and he had a table full of fezes. And I was walking over, a big smile on my face, and he had his fez on, and he said, "Hey, you, English?" And I said, "Yeah." And he went, "Just like that." And I said, "Oh, wow, do you do any more? Have you seen him?" And he said, "Who?" I said, "Tommy Cooper." He said, "Who's he?" He thought they were called just like that hats, because every man used to go over and put one on and go, "Just like that."
That is funny. That's funny that they would call it that instead of a fez and know it to that as well. Well, Doctor Who had worn, what was it, the 11th Doctor? But one of them had, I think Matt Smith wore a fez, I believe.
Yeah. I didn't watch that particular one. I like the early Hide Behind the Sofa Doctor Who's in John Pertwee when he was Doctor Who.
Like,
there's only one James Bond, and there's arguments who that might be. There was only really one.
Exactly. Doctor. Yeah. In my mind, obviously, Sean Connery was the only one. In fact, I named my son Sean after Sean Connery. So.
Oh, well. Have you met our Sean Connery over here from the Darlington Magic Circle?
I have not.
Yeah, no. He's a great lad. He is. Really great. Yeah.
So the catchphrase, just like that, came up whenever that he plucked the fez off that guy, the story you're talking about? Was that the first time he'd used that, or was that something that was a catchphrase of his for a long number of years?
Yeah, he didn't really know where it came from exactly when he was being pressed on it one day. And they'd just been putting it in the papers, which made it even bigger. So he picked up on it. He had quite a few different ones, like my teethitch, spoon jar, jar spoon, bottle glass, glass bottle, which were just bits from his magical tricks. But he would say them anywhere.
So there's nothing really going back to where that would originate, that this was the point in time whenever that happened. But, yeah, I know that's a tag phrase that is attributed to him whenever that you think of him as interchangeable. It seems like the fez catchphrase and his height and his wonky smile.
Yeah. I think it's the press, that because lots of magicians go just like that. And here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It's now a rabbit just like that. But he was the one that they picked up on. And again, listening to your audience, he exploited that.
Right,
and
right.
Made it his own, really.
Well, as we start to wrap up, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and I appreciate you being a guest here this week, and I always like to know what it is that's a person's philosophy of life. So what is it that is your magic word or phrase? What's really important to you?
What's really important to me is try to forget what's going on around the world and just concentrate on what you can do to people that are close to you. And if everyone did that, then hey presto, the world would become a better place.
A better place. Yeah. I like that. Pay attention to that. Well, great. Thank you very much, Clive. I appreciate that. That has been just marvelous. And to learn a little bit more about someone in our history that I really only had scratched the surface and knew very little, but you've given me a little bit deeper appreciation of Tommy Cooper and also about the comedy and everything else going on over in the UK. So thank you, Clive. I appreciate that.
My pleasure.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Clive St. James. This is Scotty out. Thank you, Clive. That was wonderful. I enjoyed learning a little bit more about Tommy Cooper. I knew just a little bit superficially about his life, and so I appreciate you giving us a little bit more insight and also to helping us to learn to laugh a little bit. So that was wonderful. And I would suggest to listeners, if you will go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there in the blog you'll see some videos, one of which is the world record that he had made for the Guinness World Book records, and in which he does do more jokes in 1 minute than anybody else. So you get to go and watch that video and hear that, as well as seeing a video actually of Tommy Cooper keeling over and dying on stage. It was unusual that that was actually caught live and that it is available and you can watch on YouTube. So there's a link to that video of the actual death of Tommy Cooper there when he keels over during a performance. So that's available on the website at themagicwordpodcast.com. And while you're there, of course, you can sign up for our pod letter, which I highly recommend that you do, so you can keep up from week to week as to who's going to be on from each week and who's coming up next week, and also to let you have a suggestion or two from the archives, as well as find out about the different contests that we have, like the one we have right now. And again, as I mentioned, the first part of this episode was to make sure that you go and sign up, because we'll be running this contest for another week for an opportunity to win a set of books from Gabe Fiore and Potter & Potter Auctions. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to focus on what you can do to improve the lives of those around you, and then you can make the world a better place. This is Scotty out.